Brahma-jnana-timirandhasya jnananjana-shalakaya Chakshurun-militam yena tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Samskar also be performed at the prescribed age. Well, first of all, I have to think if the child is fit for that. Yeah. It used to be a family ritual, right?
Family?
Ritual. And there was a different ages for Brahmanas, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas. What we call the Brahmin thread, actually that was traditionally given in all the castes. Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, they'd also have threads. In Bengal there were only Brahmanas and Shudras. Because one of the kings at one point, he just said the Brahmanas, out of anger against one of the kings, they just declared that, okay, everyone's a Shudra. It's quite complex, all this stuff. If so, then at the time of Pancharatri Diksha of such devotees, what happens to the thread, to their thread-giving ceremony? Actually, Upanayanam Samskara is for studying the Vedas. We don't study the Vedas per se. For studying Srimad Bhagavatam, Upanayanam Samskara, which is the better than the Vedas for Kali Yuga, or Mahabharat. For that, the Upanayanam Samskara is not required. So it may not be necessary at all to have Upanayanam Samskara. Because we put more emphasis on Bhagavatam than the Vedas anyway. We do consider Bhagavatam Shruti, according to Jiva Goswami. But then at the same time, in traditional society, yeah, actually the Brahmanas would recite Puranas, but everyone can listen to it. Stri Shudra Dvija Bandhunam Traina Veda Gocha. Here, Veda means Shruti. And therefore, the Mahabharata was compiled, and everyone can listen to it. So, Shruti can only be heard by the upper castes, or the upper Varnas, to be more precise. So, Bhagavatam, it's accepted as Shruti by Jiva Goswami, that means by us, but at the same time the rules for hearing Shruti do not apply. And actually the speaker of the Bhagavatam, Sutta means he's not a Brahmana by caste. But when Romaharshan was killed, Romaharshan's Sutta, but then the rishis who were present said to Balaram that you've committed the sin of Brahmahatya. Not exactly the sin, but they considered him a Brahman. He was speaking, he took the role of a Brahman. Anyway, these are often very complex questions. Basically, we should just understand that the status of a Brahmana is included in that of a Vaishnava. So if one is chanting Hare Krishna with a motive to surrender to Krishna, he's above Varnashram in one sense. But as much as we have material desires, then we need to follow Varnashram. But the devotees may also take roles, but it's not their real identity. It's not even their prime identity. Neither as he identifies himself, nor as others should identify him. As long as one is not a Vaishnava, one's primary identity, as it is conceived of by himself and by others in society, as there's a Brahmana, Vaishya, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra or Antyaja. But if one is a Vaishnava, then he may play a role as a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya or Shudra, not a Chandana. He may play that role, but he understands himself as Gopi Bhata, Pada Kamala, Dasa, Nidasa, Dasa. And others should also consider him like that. And to consider him otherwise is an offense. Here the refutation, Brahma Gyan is a distorted form of knowledge of God. What's the whole quote? SCS, Sri Chaitanya Shikamrita, page 161. Anyway, the question is, what are the differences between Advaitavadis and true followers of Jnana Khanda in terms of their understanding, practices and destination? It's an often asked question. The Mayavadis, followers of Shankaracharya, and Brahmavadis, like the four Kumaras. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Mayavadi Krishna Aparadhi. The Mayavadis are offenders to Krishna because they deny that he has any form, qualities, personality, name. Whereas the Advaitavadis or the Brahmavadis, it appears that they just don't have much information about Krishna. And thus they don't deny him. Of course the four Kumaras, they went to Vaikuntha for darshan of Vishnu. What was their philosophical conception of him? Maybe it needs some more research. Maybe they accepted him as the supreme, but they were personally attached to the impersonal process. They weren't deliberately or directly formulating and propagating a philosophy denying the supremacy of Krishna. But they felt that, again, they didn't have association with. Unless and until you have associates with pure devotees, you can be as advanced as the four Kumaras and still not get the point. One has to have association with devotees. Or with, in their case, with Vishnu himself. But they didn't have contact with Vishnu or Vaishnavism. Because when they did, then they immediately felt a change. Again, which wouldn't happen to everyone because they were in many ways in very pure consciousness. Then just by smelling the aroma of the tulasi leaves from Vishnu's feet, then they became overwhelmed with the ecstasy of Krishna consciousness. It doesn't happen to everyone. They were very pure. So they may not have had so much information about Krishna. We say Brahmara Durlabha Prem, or that even to get Krishna Prasad is very rare. We hear, why is it rare? We're getting it all the time. But it may not be generally available, or even knowledge of Krishna consciousness may not always be available. And I was raised in a culture where there was no knowledge of Krishna consciousness. Within Vedic culture, it may be like that also. If you're raised in the Mimamsaka school, we have no idea. You may be following all the Vedic rituals, but we have no idea that Krishna consciousness is the goal of life. But if you're raised in a culture which which has knowledge of Krishna but directly denies him, well, that's very unfortunate. Shankaracharya himself, of course, he left clues. I mean, right in his very first verse of his Gita commentary, he says, Narayana Parovyakta. But his followers, they don't take the... I mean, that's more than a clue, isn't it? It's, he says everything comes from Avyakta. But then right at the very beginning, he says Narayana is beyond that. But people are attached to the wrong understanding. We need to do research and make a book called The Real Shankaracharya. It's one of the many thousands of books that need to be written.
Krishna says in 2000 that there are three things which are prescribed as us: karma, jnana and bhakti. So the genuine jnanis, according to the Vedic process, who are going for the Vedic process, and the mayavadis, who say that they are jnanis, but they are vivartavadis and they are... So what will be the difference in these two?
What is the difference between the jnani mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, Uddhava Gita, and the followers of Shankaracharya, or even... Well, you have to look into their philosophy more deeply, but I think it's what I just said, right?
They actually become
offensive. Maybe more so after the Vaishnavism was propagated. I mean, you'll find people who, just like years ago, on this BBT library party, we presented Prabhupada's Bhagavatam to one, library curator or something, and he said, "Ah, what is this? This is all just stories, that's all." He was very dismissive of the Bhagavatam. He didn't respect the Bhagavatam. He must have thought the Upanishads were much better. And generally the Bhagavatam in the modern world as it's presented, it's katha, it's told as some light level stories for people without serious interest in spiritual life, without philosophical interest, as a pious entertainment. So those who think that we are the followers of the Upanishads, we're interested in serious study, then they may be dismissive of the Bhagavatam. Then they become offensive. One of the reasons that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was so strongly against the upper sampradayas who claimed to be followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was that they caused other people to be, not only were they offensive themselves, but they caused other people to be also. They gave a wrong impression of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his teaching, so that people think that Vaishnavism is just some low class excuse for gross sinful sense indulgence. Regarding Nrsimha Homam for health, etc., is questioned by some that this may slacken our faith on it and bring in the karma kanda mentality. Quite possible. For those whose chanting the holy names does not get affected by bad health, need not bother anything about their health. But for others, it is necessary to try to keep good health by medication and prayer to the Lord. Their acts will remain pure in proportion to the purity of their aim to serve Krishna through these acts. On the other hand, even chanting of the holy names will become offensive if done for the goal of enjoying good health. That is why a sadhak on the Vaidhi stage He's asked to perform those varnashram duties that create a favorable situation of body, mind, and environment. It cannot be said that only chanting the holy names is sufficient for him, because he is still attached to the body. Of course, he will not do anything which is detrimental to bhakti. For example, worshipping demigods for good health. Also, in his worshipping the Lord through Nrisimha Yajna or taking medication or otherwise, his internal mood is, as per the verse, Tatenu Kampam. This was depicted by Srila Prabhupada praying personally after he got two heart attacks on the Jaladuta, and his asking his disciples to pray through a standard prayer later. Yeah, the standard prayer was Namaste Narasimhaya. That was introduced by Prabhupada in ISKCON to protect his health. Thus, I think all the procedures prescribed for the pure Vaishnavas in Hari Bhakti Vilas and Shat Kriya Sardipika for the upkeep of the material circumstances should be followed, and the dependence on them will be reduced to the degree our bhajan becomes independent of our material situation. Interesting question. What does it mean to fully depend on Krishna? Madhavendra Puri followed Aya Chakravarti. That means he would get whatever came to him without asking. If someone gave him food, he would eat. If they didn't, he would starve. How far do we adopt this? I mean, even after getting the food, he might have thought, or someone might think, if someone follows this, they might think, well, Krishna should also cause someone to open my mouth and pour the food in. I mean, even if you get the food, you have to make some effort to eat it. And how far does this go? In the modern world, or even in the ancient world, there are mats, ashrams, in which there is a regular arrangement for prasadam. So should we, whereas in Madhukari, well, there are different systems. In Madhukari, you may go to the same people every day, or you may go to different people. If you go to the same people, they know, okay, here he comes, giving two chapatis, it's the same every day. If you go to different people, you may not get food at all. So in the ashram, we're actually making some arrangement for food, for income. How far do you go with this? Is it wrong to... Even having an ashram is an arrangement for shelter. But that's so that people can take to the processes of Krishna consciousness. So how far do you extend this? It appears that the extension is growing greater as time goes on. For instance, sadhus did not... Previously they would not wear shoes. They wouldn't sleep on beds. Still today, if you don't sleep on a bed, that's better. You shouldn't go by vehicle. We're buying vehicles, using vehicles. So, as the point again, that Hari Seva Anukulyaiva, if it's favorable for devotion, we should do so. Prabhupada built that, the Krishna Balaram Mandir, and he said, I'm making this somewhat comfortable facility so that my Western disciples can come here and take advantage of the Vrindavan atmosphere. So he didn't expect devotees to come from the West, but they're used to a certain standard of comfort, and come to India and live as some of the traditional sadhus do. Actually, the ashram Prabhupada built, it's just plain rooms, actually. Sometimes I used to stay, and you would just sleep on the floor in a very small room. Myself, Pundarik and Ruchi used to stay in one room, and that was it. That was the room full. You couldn't sleep more than three in a room. So it was pretty plain, but Prabhupada thought that was some good facility, because in other places, I don't know what they give in other places. So, how far do you go with this? Should we make if we get sick, should we just chant the holy name? That's stated in Shastra. And some sadhus used to follow that, just like Gaurakishore does Babaji. But generally, Prabhupada would say that, actually I looked this up about insurance, and in one, this comes later, it's a similar question, should we get insurance? Prabhupada, I looked this up in the Vedas, and in one letter Srila Prabhupada said that about insurance, your question, does it, taking insurance for brahmacharis, health insurance, does it go against the principle of ananyas chintayanto mam, we should just depend on Krishna. So Prabhupada in one letter he said, regarding insurance for the devotees, let the GBC decide. So I mean, he didn't say, if he was on principle against it, I think he would have said so. But in another case, Rameshwar was showing the BBT go down and said, we have everything insured. So Prabhupada wasn't against insurance on principle. I think it'd be pretty stupid to have a huge go down full of books and no insurance. Should be insured. In that same letter, it came up about health. Prabhupada said he'd consult a doctor. Because often Prabhupada in the early days used to give devotees some ideas. Gopi Chandra, that will get rid of. If you have a pimple, put Gopi Chandra. That will. So he offered different cures. And then devotees all the time come to Prabhupada for cures. Prabhupada said, consult a doctor. How far do you go? That will be seen in different cases. Prabhupada was, different doctors would come, and he went, but he was not very good in following their advice. Astrologers would come. And Prabhupada did pursue it to some extent. But then it was like on one hand he was having astrologers, but then on the other hand he would just dismiss it all. So almost upon his mood, it would seem. In one astrologer, they told Prabhupada that they should do Mritunjay Jaya. Mritunjay means Lord Shiva. So Prabhupada didn't do that. With this Nrisimha Yajna, Nrisimha Homa, should we just chant Hare Krishna? Probably yes, and probably not good to encourage people to do all kinds of yajnas. One thing I remember, you know, I don't encourage my disciples to wear these Nrisimha kavachas. We're chanting Hare Krishna. We're putting on tilak, was it? Gopi Chand, that's a kavacha. But there was one case where one disciple of mine, I saw she was wearing this. And I said, why take this? It's not something that Prabhupada gave. And she was living in the temple there in Ireland, which is full of ghosts. And she said, actually, after taking this, it made a big difference. I couldn't get any sleep because of disturbance from ghosts. But after this, there was no problem. So it may be in some cases. When Murari Gupta Prabhu, his first child, was diagnosed that he has no kidneys. So as soon as he comes out of the womb, he's going to die. So I had his wife, I told her to chant daily this Nrisimha Kavacha for the child. He didn't expect the child to live, and he didn't. Came out of the womb and died. But for the protection of the soul of the child, Nrisimha Kavacha, we're chanting, not Mritunjay Japa. So maybe there may be some case for it. And this is the way in which the Lord has allowed himself to be approached for certain, for asking him to intercede in our material situation. So it's not outside the scope of Vaishnavism. But at the same time, we should be careful that we don't get into this kind of karma kandya mood, where for every little thing we are having this yagya, that yagya. Better to have Harinam yagya. I personally, as you may know, had this done for me, after this Nrisimha Homa, for my health, with the sankalpa that, so that I may better serve Krishna. Because I'd been to so many doctors for so many years, and my, no change in my health situation, which I would prefer would improve so that I could serve Krishna better. And as I was told by the astrologer who recommended me to do this, after going through, looking astrologically for so many things, he went through so many things that might help. And this is the only one that came up. And he said it's actually included, it's accepted as part of Ayurveda to do this. So I did it. And anyway, let's see. But it's not right, I wouldn't recommend for everyone. Maybe it's, I shouldn't have done because it'll set an example for others. That's also a consideration, which I didn't think of at the time. One thing also, that doing yagyas and having the intensive Ayurvedic treatment, traditionally that wasn't for everyone. That would be for rajas, not for everyone. The raja is very, he's very important to the whole of society. So, and he can afford also all these expensive treatments. Not that everyone would do that. Some simple things they would do, but there's very intensive treatments and especially expensive medicine. Not that everyone would do that. So again, not exactly a black and white answer. There may be some grounds for this. You say, what's the prescribed procedures in Hari Bhakti Vilasan Shatkriya Saradipika? Yeah, we can follow those. You'll have to see. Again, we can see seeing the example of Srila Prabhupada will be very helpful for us in all of this. Because exactly how do we follow? Prabhupada had massage every day. Sannyasi, we find in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected the idea. He said, well, some oil was brought for rubbing on. He said, next thing you're going to keep a masseur for me. Sannyasi, but Prabhupada took it. It maintained, after he had a stroke, then he took that every day. And by doing that, his spiritual body, which was operating within the material world, was able, his spiritualized body, he's able to travel all over the world and preach Krishna consciousness. So it's good he had a massage every day. So again, we have to see, what is the motive? Is it to serve Krishna? Should everyone do it? No, we should encourage everyone to chant Hare Krishna. There may be cases where some other measure may be taken to. Okay, I'm going to break there. We have to clear the room for serving prasad and also. 1:15 we said, now it's 1:16. And we'll continue at 4:45. In the easy journey to other planets, he says that they'll make better citizens of the state if people are devotees. So we can present it like that also. But it shouldn't be the main or the only thrust of our preaching. And especially among devotees, we should always be very clear about what is devotional service. Srila Prabhupada envisioned that those who come in to the, and very close, they will be brahmanas who will lead the society. They will be absorbed in shastra, absorbed in bhakti. And as I understand it, he didn't expect everyone to be on that level, but there should be a core of brahmanas to lead the society. Real brahmanas who know Shastra, who live according to Shastra. So, Srila Prabhupada's vision, how that will be enacted, it may be very different from the 1960s or 1970s ISKCON in many ways. Just like we were discussing that yagyas, performing yagyas, and then we get, now we have devotees doing pujas for people's new motorbikes and cars, and how far do you go? Well, if they don't come to us, they'll go to someone else. We can do it with, you take your motorbike with Krishna's blessings. I mean, we do that, right? With clothes, we offer that to Krishna. The idea you should offer whatever you use, you offer it to Krishna. So the idea that, well, you offer this motorbike or you take the blessings from God, well, better they take blessings from Krishna than from Sai Baba or whatever. So that may be there. So that may seem to add a, if we do that, that may seem to add a karmic influence to our movement. It may very well be there also. How to balance that? Well, the preachers and teachers have to be pure devotees and always preaching to keep everything in proper focus. That, all right, we'll perform rituals for someone's baby or whatever. But Hari Seva Anukulaiva, everything should be done for the sake of Hari Seva. It is a very delicate point because the tendency of materialistic people to convert the language and the activities of bhakti into activities of sense gratification is that's the whole story of the material world. That's the whole story of religion. As Srila Prabhupada said, Jesus, he didn't come to teach this eating and sleeping business. But they converted Jesus into a meat eater and a drunkard. He wasn't a meat eater or a drunkard, it seems from research. But they made him into a drunkard. They redefined him as a drunkard so they could all be drunkards. So that tendency is there. Now we have, as Jayadeva Swami pointed out a few years ago, that there's been the all-merciful Prabhupada, just like Jesus. That you just believe in Jesus and you do whatever you like and Jesus will forgive you. But Prabhupada himself, he never said that. He never said, well, you do whatever you like and I'll forgive you. You just believe in me, some vague statement. But he pointed out that the Christians are hypocritical because they don't follow Jesus, what he said. But it's been converted from Christianity. They've made Prabhupada into the new Jesus. Some people. You just believe in him and pray to him and love him and Prabhupada will save you. Whatever, you don't have to follow anything. You just believe in him. That's all. And you'll find that the whole generation of, in the West especially, many of the young people who grew up in devotee families, they have this understanding of Prabhupada. They don't have any guru or need any guru because just they know Prabhupada since childhood and they just believe in Prabhupada and they don't follow anything, but they just, it's Ritvikish idea, but then they're not even that serious to take even a Ritvik initiation then, yes. Just the idea, you know, Prabhupada is just, he loves me. And therefore, he understands me. That I really love Krishna. I don't have to follow all these things because I just love Prabhupada. And I love Krishna. So these things, you have to be very careful. So, yeah, such statements can be interpreted like that. And that chanting Hare Krishna will relieve all distress and you'll get good health. It can be misinterpreted. And that's again why we need acharyas who live and speak according to the actual teachings of Rupa Goswami. And we can expect that as Krishna consciousness spread more widely, that more and more people will adopt the sahajya mode and the karmic mode. Maybe not exactly in the Hindu way, but maybe mixed with their own culture. It's practically inevitable. That's why we have to keep on speaking the right thing. Otherwise within our own ISKCON, we get supposed to be spiritual leaders teaching that, well, the most important thing is you have to smile. You told me that at a seminar, one of our leaders. The most important thing is that you always have to smile. And we see that also. In Russia once, I saw there was a picture of a lotus petal, drawing of a lotus petal. On each petal was a picture of one of the ISKCON gurus who was regularly visiting Russia. My picture wasn't there. And every picture was of them smiling. Like the main duty of a guru is to smile. Seems that that's the idea. Smile, blesses you, and then you, that's it. So, yeah, okay, what's the next question? Can it encourage this misunderstanding? If it's taken wrongly, yeah. It's not untrue that Harinam is the best medicine, it's the best for everything material. It's not untrue. We shouldn't want to edit it from Shastra. But how it's understood, we have to understand it in context of the fuller picture. That's why it's very good to distribute this. The Prabhupada's books, this Prahlad Maharaj, Transcendental Teachings of Prahlad Maharaj. Very good. Just like a little bomb for destroying any hopes of material happiness. Who told me that? Someone, Gurudas, was it? He told me that he went in a shop and showed someone a book, and he opened up Prahlad Maharaj, Transcendental Teachings, and read it a little bit and gave it back and said he didn't want any of the books. So who told me that? Madhukanta told me that. So what does that mean? We shouldn't distribute books like that? That means we should distribute books like that. Unfortunately, he didn't take it, but others will take it, and it'll reach the right person at the right time. Anyone who reads it, they're going to be shocked, because you can go in Chennai or Bangalore, go and look in all the bookshops, even the religious bookshops. You won't find anything like that. Just a complete exposure of the miseries of material life and how material attachment is the cause of bondage and suffering. Just brutal to the materialist. They should hear this. And they should hear it with the proper conclusion also, that we have to surrender to Krishna. So that small book is like a little, not even a book, it's a booklet. It's a very potent bomb. Which, that people don't like to hear it, is the reason that it should be spoken and distributed. Otherwise, if we just speak what people like to hear, it just becomes useless. this essay I'm working on, I'm just going on and on working on speaking strongly in Prabhupada's service. And practically all the time I've been out there, I've been working on this. Still didn't get it right. Because I went through it, I thought I'd finished it, and I thought I'd give it a final read, and I find there's so many repetitions. So I'm just completely reworking the whole thing. But it's necessary. Why we have to speak strongly. You have to see also how, to who, as I'm told by Mahatattva Prabhu, in America now, especially where he is in Southern California, the present generation, they're all like, what's that word, scarred? What's that word? Where you have some bad experience, and then I just can't remember the word now. Scarred, sky. They traumatized by organized religions, where there's Christian fundamentalist preaching. So they don't want to hear the word God, they don't want to hear the word preach, Lord. What do you say to them? You pretend you're a Buddhist or what? He has a whole strategy that you bring people in, you speak no more than 15 minutes in a general way. Have blissful kirtan, give them prasadam and speak to them individually. Not in the temple room, in a little room at the side. And then the success is if they come another time. But he said it's the kirtan, the power of the kirtan. People go to all these different yoga groups and Buddhist groups, but they don't have anything like our kirtan. Even they may have this rascal's kirtans, but it doesn't have the spiritual shakti. So if you can get them to come again, if they come a third time, then you invite them to the temple. Otherwise you don't invite them to there. In the temple you speak whatever you want to speak. So then it may not be that we always, the first time that we meet people, that we tell them straight out that material life is totally miserable. We may do. It depends. We have to see. Preaching is also an art. But we shouldn't avoid saying that. It's not that under any circumstances we should never say this. Rather, we should say it. But how and to whom? Just like you told me in Croatia, you met people, rich people from Zagreb on holiday. And at first you were just like joking with them and this and that. Then after a few minutes you said something, they asked you something about philosophy. You said, well, actually, material life is miserable. And then, after you've made a little rapport with them, then they, oh yeah, actually it's true. Then they were ready to hear it. It's not that you didn't say it, but it's not like the first thing you said to them. First a little rapport, a little speaking of them like that. So we have to see. As I mentioned in that book, you can't tell. When you speak the truth, some people may get angry, some people may be turned off, some people may transform their life, and they'll just take up Krishna consciousness. I gave a quote from an essay from Ravindra Swarup Prabhu. He was a student of religion at Temple University in Philadelphia. It's a quote from one of his essays. He went to the temple, the Hare Krishna temple. It was like the last thing he wanted to do. But somehow or other, one of his friends got him to go to the temple. And someone gave the lecture, he said, it was the most welcome thing I'd ever heard. He spoke about how material life is miserable, and this and that, people are cheating, and he said, at last someone's speaking the truth. And that changed his life. So it might be that other people, they didn't like it, or they didn't relate to it, but one person, it changed their life. So I wrote in that essay, at least for these people, we should speak. We should not fail to speak the truth. People may not like it, but for those people who are ready to hear it, And for those who are not ready to hear it, they also need to hear it. The truth is the truth, and it has its own value, which people, they can't, they don't like it because it's true. And it annoys them, but the annoyance is also it means that we made some communication with them. They heard what we said, and it will stay with them, because no one speaks like this. It will have its effect. Whereas if we just, anyway, you can see it. Oh, eventually, when I bring out that lecture, I say if you give sugar coated pills, but there has to be medicine inside. If you just give sugar, that's cheating. You have to give, there must be medicine. And gradually you have to give stronger doses. If we fail to give the actual thing, then what are we doing? That's not preaching. Just bringing people and having a group photo with 500 people smiling, that's not preaching. You have to change the life. What did you want to say?
What did you say? Just talking about experience of we're inviting on that interfaith meeting.
Yeah, interfaith meeting.
Yeah. So we were thinking what to speak. There were all Christian nuns there, you know, and one Muslim, one Hindu, and all other Christians. The program everybody meant to, you know, take photos with us and convert people to Christianity. So we thought that anyway, we get 5 minutes to speak. So we spoke just openly. And then I was sharing this with devotee from another temple where they have different preaching strategy. And then he said, what is the result, you see? You strongly preach, and few nuns came up, they're really appreciating. But now they will never invite you anymore for programs. What is the result, he said.
Well, that's a good result if they don't invite you again.
Actually, yeah, we always call them. I let them once in life hear the truth.
Yeah.
You speak pleasingly.
That's another point I made, that you might not meet people. In most cases, you won't even meet them again. So let them hear at least once in their life.
If you go flattering and some...
Then they'll just forget you.
Yeah, they'll think we are right. We are doing okay. Even they...
Yeah, they're just...
They're doing okay.
Yeah.
Yeah? Then this is worse.
I wrote that on... You may not get another chance, but I might write that down. Let people at least once in their life hear the truth. See, I could go on writing this forever, this essay. Like that Bhaktisiddhanta book. I went on for years and years and years. There's always more things coming in. There's no end to it. What is the result of speaking strongly? Yeah, people may say, it may not be an immediate result. There's another case in there of, again, with Ravindra Swarup Prabhu. He brought a professor to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada just cut him up, blasted him. And the man was shouting back at Prabhupada, and then they had to remove him. And that was the professor at his university, so it was tough for him at the university. And then the professor, he in the whole university, the religion department, everyone, he gave a very bad impression to everyone. But then later, he was actually from a Vaishnava background. So an Indian from a Vaishnava background. But later he realized Prabhupada was right. Someone else, it all comes in that essay. So one devotee mentioned that Prabhupada would have us bring all these professors. And he'd just chew them up. And every time he said, bring more professors. And, but he said he dealt with them differently. If they respected him, he'd still speak strongly. But if they were like puffed up, he'd really, if they respected him, still he'd speak strongly. But if they were puffed up, he'd really mangle them and really pound them. And he was very, very heavy. They may say, what is the result? Well, in the case of Prabhupada, the result is Krishna consciousness all over the world. And in many cases, the devotee told me that He heard Prabhupada, the first time he heard Prabhupada, he was speaking how the United Nations all cheating. In those days, no one said, people thought United Nations, wonderful. He said, he never thought of that. It just amazed him. The Prabhupada just pointed that out, and that changed his life here in that. Many of the things that Srila Prabhupada said, he was like ahead of his time. The moonshot is all bogus. There's no one in the world. It was the only one person who would think of that at the time. And now it's become well known. At least many people accept that the so-called moonshot was bogus. There must be dozens of internet sites about all this. So many things that Prabhupada said, which people in general, they wouldn't accept at the time. I heard it said, Prabhupada said that Churchill was the biggest demon of the Second World War. And now some book got published recently. It's all research on Churchill, how he killed probably as many people as Hitler by starving people in India, by causing an artificial famine. Prabhupada spoke about that. He deliberately withheld the crops so that people in millions... And the viceroy at the time wrote to him at the time, and the only reply he got from Churchill is that why hasn't Gandhi starved yet? That's the only reply he got. They wrote so many people are starving, and there was no need. It could have been solved very easily. There was supply of grain that could have been brought in, but he deliberately starved literally millions of people then. So he was a big demon, and no one could imagine that at the time. Anyway, we're digressing from the subject of these questions. Bhagavad Gita 8.3 purport. Living entities descend in the form of rain. Then they enter the greens, and then enter the semen, and the human form. Do humans evolve from plants? Well, this is for those who are coming from the heavenly planets, right? It's not everyone. Those come from the heavenly planets, that's stated in the Upanishads. Chandogya, is it? Is it? No. This is how they come down from the heavenly planets. So not everyone. If you're coming up from the hellish planets, then you don't go that way. Do grains have life? Before we harvest them. Right? Grains individually mean, or each plant?
The grain. Seeds. Seeds.
The seeds, well, they, yeah, otherwise how do they grow?
Like, when we supply the proper condition, then the soul enters. When a proper atmosphere is given to them, at that time the soul enters into...
I don't know exactly how it works. Srila Prabhupada said that every cell, the soul is there. So, then there would be one particular soul, I guess, of each rice plant. And then there'd be different souls in each grain. So otherwise, how are they going to grow? That means even when they're harvested, actually, and they're dry, from such grains, that if they're planted... So in one sense, we say that the grains that we eat, people ask us about vegetarians, and we say they're already dead, but actually they are living. So yeah, the soul must be there, otherwise how is the plant going to grow? Must be, right? Soul must be there in the plant. And then millions of souls ejected with each seminar discharge. Yeah, must be, at least in each cell. And with each, what's that called? Sperm cell? There must be some fancy Latin name for that, I guess. In physiology? Sperm cell? You just say sperm cell. Is there life in each one? Maybe not. According to, at least if we try try to understand through modern science. Not everyone has the potency to fertilize the ovum, isn't it?
Yeah.
But they talk about in the modern age about sperm count.
Yeah.
I don't know how it works. I mean, it's a subject of research. Exactly how it works, I don't know. Yeah.
I asked this question, Gopi Parayana, and he said that there is a life in these sperm cells.
Yeah, just the fact they're cells means they should be alive.
They move. They move. They're alive.
Yeah.
Therefore, this is called.
But whether each one is capable of evolving or mixing with the ovum and evolving into a.
But it's the same like
into a mammal.
That is the same like with the grain. Grain has potency to grow in the plant, but if there is no seeds, you see, it's seeds.
Well, it's not that every. Well, in the case of grain, if it's alive under the proper conditions, it should sprout.
So similarly.
But not I'm not sure. This is a scientific question, biological question. I'm not sure if, as far as I understand, not every. Sperm has got the potency to mix with the ovum, and then that will give rise to a child being born. I'm not sure. That's a question for the biologists to answer.
Also, we might see that in the case of Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, because of the wrong time of having sex, such devil souls were attracted. So if they're already existing in the sperm cells, then this question...
it may be, yeah, that's a good point, that because of the... that's a good point, that because of the wrong time of copulation, at this time, the evening sandhya, Kashyap, he injected his semen into Diti. So the semen already, the cells were there, so life must have been there. But then particular living beings were sent to enter the womb of Diti. So how exactly it works, what is that? Karmana daiva netrena janto deho papati. Exactly how each living being gets his soul, it works according, gets his body. In the material world, that works under the direction of the of one's previous activities, and it's overseen by the Supreme Lord and the demigods. Although in this case, the demigods didn't know. It was a special case. It was when the darkness came from Diti's pregnancy, they didn't know what was going on. And they asked Lord Brahma, and he said, don't worry, it's all... It's a bit messy, but we know what's going on. So it's because of Diti's pregnancy. These two demons are in the womb. So in that case, they weren't sent by the demigods. They'd actually come from Vaikuntha. So that must have been arranged. Actually, it was all arranged by the Lord's Leela potency in connection with the material energy. Because they came for a purpose to interact with the Lord's, with the Lord himself, Varaha Dev and Nrisimha Dev. So that's an unusual case. But yeah, it that must be there then. That would seem to be like that the particular soul is sent according to there are various factors, the consciousness of both the male and the female human, and the at the time of copulation, and the circumstances in which they do it. So these are all different factors by which the demigods, they send different persons to different wombs. Yeah.
Can I read just this answer? It's very interesting from Gopi Parayana Prabhu.
He sent you a letter?
Yeah. Semen does not live very long, even inside the body. It is produced as needed. So although semen contains a lot of jivas, they don't live there very long. A few days at most. Those who know the standards of Brahmanical life know that wasting semen is sinful. It is called bruna hatya, or murder of the unborn.
Mm.
if we accept that from the veins and then they enter the brain.
Gopi Prandhan Prabhu, apart from being a scholar in Shastra, he's also quite learned in many other, in other fields, so he's able to apply that knowledge of modern learning, and through the understanding of Shastra, he can explain it.
Yeah.
Not just this field, in many fields. He's a highly intelligent, obviously. He's quite learned in various fields of science, like this. Mm.
So, Guru Maharaj, if we accept like rain and then the grains and then the person eats the grain and that gets into the semen, then this point that Garbhadhan Samskar is important, everything gets...
Yeah, interesting, huh? Well, I guess there are different souls come in different ways. Again, karmana daiva netrena, everything is organized by the demigod. So, Garbhadhan Samskar, I guess the demigods must arrange it with someone who had the grain. If that person is going to the person who has the Garbhadhan Samskar, if he's going to get a child who was previously a demigod, then the demigods must have arranged that in advance. And generally those who are coming from the heavenly planets will take birth in the higher family, Shuchinam, Srimatam, Gehe, Yoga Brashto, Vijayate. So, generally they will go to families in which these sanskars are performed. The sanskar also, apart from attracting good souls, it may also have the, just like the sanskars are, they also help to purify the consciousness of the unborn child. It's not just for the mother and the other people, but for the child also. So yeah, that's an interesting observation. Again, these points need more research. We need a research institute. Maybe if I say that as a, like 1,008 times. Some mystic potency. I must have said it a few hundred times by now.
You are accumulating books, and Gordon now has a program. He's going to scan and put them at least in a few folios. We are going to prepare now. So at least some help.
Some help, yeah. But we need people of very good intelligence and scholarly disposition to take this up. And even one person, how much work can they do? One man's finishing the 9-volume history, like he's spent 20 years researching the history of the big temple in Sri Ranga. 20 years on one temple. Nine big books he's written. And there are so many things. But we need that. And there are people of Gopi Prandhan Prabhu, this kind of intelligence. But unfortunately for years he was not sponsored or helped. And not everyone also, there may be others who had research assistants, or not everyone's on the same level of intelligence or scholarly disposition. They can also do good work. But that's required. Very much required. In many, many, many areas. Actually all areas.
I just remember my old days when in college, we were taught this subject of how this fertilization occurs. So in that it was said that many sperms, when they get, they are potent, equally potent to fertilize the ovum.
They say it takes many sperms.
Yeah, it takes many sperms.
That's why they say that people have low sperm counts. I was told it's only one.
No, but only one, like, because this...
They need someone, they need more sperms to push it in or something, is it?
Because the condition of the ovary is very acidic.
So many sperms go, only one survives, one or two.
Oh, and yeah, when they're two or six, that's there in Ayurveda also. If the woman has too much pitta, she can't conceive. That may be one of the reasons they can't conceive. Anyway, let's not get into that too much now. You also studied medicine?
No, it was still 12.
Oh, I see, just at school. Whom does the Nishkam Karma Yogi worship? Who does the Nishkam Karma Yogi worship? The demigods, and through them Vishnu, or directly Vishnu, or Brahman. Well, I don't know offhand, but I would think that it may be different for different people. I mean, you do get people who are Shaivas who are cultivating Nishkam Karma, isn't it, also? Shaivas.
I think, as far as I understood, as soon as you say yogi, yogi means he knows the Lord is Krishna. Otherwise, he's Paramakandi.
Yeah. Well, it may be also that they have a general sense, just like we were talking about the Kumaras. The general sense, a yogi may mean someone who has a general sense of spiritual need, but without a clear, focused understanding of who. The word Brahma is there. Kim tad Brahma? Arjuna asks, what is that Brahma? And Krishna, what does he reply? Aksharam Brahma Paramam. And then you may go, well, what is Akshara? But Arjuna himself says, Param Brahma Param Dhamma Pavitram Paramam Bhava. So Arjuna himself gives the answer to that question. So the word Brahma is generally used in, that's the word in the Upanishads.
It's different from demigods.
Different from the demigods, but it's generally understood impersonally. But they may, according to different conceptions, they may worship the demigods with the idea that in this way we're worshipping. By worshipping the demigods, they're symbols of the ultimate Brahman and like this. You've heard all this. Again, it may be different in different schools. Where Ravana and Hiranyakashipu also worship demigods with the understanding that Vishnu is the ultimate beneficiary. Well, with their understanding, it was perverted from beginning to end. I mean, the understanding that Vishnu is the ultimate beneficiary, that is based on a very clear understanding of tattva, but their whole understanding is completely messed up. So it's like even Hiranyakashipu, we find that he says that Vishnu is supreme, but he thought he wanted to kill him. So he accepted that Vishnu is supreme, but he wanted to kill him. Kamsa also accepted that Vishnu is supreme. So now he said he's gone and hidden in everyone's heart. People take the knowledge of Shastra, and in one sense you may say they understand it, but they get it all messed up because of their misconceptions. Just like, to give an example, there are hundreds and thousands of these. But just like someone was saying, yeah, that at the Katars, the Brahmanas, they should all dress very nicely. Because, you see, at the Samudra Manthan, the churning of the milk ocean, Vishnu was dressed very nicely, he got Lakshmi. And Shiva came looking like a beggar and he got the poison. So then you should dress nicely. With all jewels like Vishnu. So what Ravana and Hiranyakashipu's understanding was, I can't say exactly, but it was a mess. I don't think we should try to understand too much what it was. I've heard it said, I don't know if it's true because I've not had it confirmed, but many years ago I heard it said that a devotee, when Srila Prabhupada brought out this, the first part of Chaitanya Charitamrita, of his commentary, the first part that he translated was chapter 7 of Adi Lila, which is largely devoted to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's defeating the Mayavadis of Varanasi. And there's a lot of commentary in there translated from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's purports, complex discussion of Mayavada. So I heard it said, Prabhupada had first had this published as an individual book, just chapter 7. So I heard it said, the devotee said to Prabhupada, said that, Prabhupada, I can't understand this Mayavada philosophy. Prabhupada said, that's good. If you understood it, you'd be in trouble. It's not understanding, it doesn't make any sense. So I heard that said. I don't know if it's true. It's quite possible. So we shouldn't worry too much what Ramana was thinking. Yeah, this Indrajit, he was doing yajnas, right?
Ramana himself.
Yeah, he was a son, they were all sons. Hiranyakashipu, he was the cousin of Vishnu. Vishnu got born later. But then in one sense we're all related to Vishnu, right? We're all children. But he was born in the same family. Sorry?
If we are related to Vishnu, then we are related to
Hiranyakashipu. We are. We're all related to Hiranyakashipu. Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam. We're all related. Yeah, but that's why I said Indrajit, because in the battle he went away to do a yajna to get strength to fight and kill Vishnu. How about that? And in Shastra also we find all different, the Atharva Veda is full of all this, and this worshipping, making spells, abhija as a word. Shastric word for magic, black magic. You can invoke lower forces to. It's going on in India all the time, right? People, all over the world it's going on. You invoke some lower spirits. So if not, are they in Karma Kanda? In Karma Kanda, I wouldn't say that Ravana was in Karma Kanda. He was just a demon. I mean, he may be following, in some sense, the Vedic culture, but the Vedic culture is based on dharma. But Duryodhana may have also thought, I'm following dharma. When he was dying, he said, see, I'm happy. I performed so many yajnas. I served so many brahmanas. And now you have to live with all your sinful reactions for having killed so many people in an adharmic way. So he thought he was dharmic, but he wasn't. So they may think that they're very pious, but they're not really. There's no purification because they have such a demoniac attitude. We find in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says about the demons. What is that? Nama yajnas, they perform yajnas just in name only. They're demons, but they perform yajnas. But because their attitude is so sinful, they get the result of going to hell. So that can't be called proper karma kanda. There should be this spirit of at least that should be inculcated, this spirit of dharma, of wanting to perform activity. The whole purpose in the Vedic culture, you perform sacrifice, the idea that we recognize a higher power, and from the beginning, dharma, it inculcates the idea that we're supposed to act not only for our own benefit, but for the benefit of others. and one should perform activities for others as a duty. So if that's not there, there's not really dharma at all. That's the very beginning. We should plant trees on the road so people get shade, dig ponds and wells, public services so people can benefit. One might do that as a demon also, but just like we find it in the modern politicians, they do something for the public, but their aim is to get their votes so that they can retain their position and go on totally, grossly. Their overall aim is to grossly exploit others. But they make a show of doing a few public benefit works so that people think they're good people. But they're not. So would you call a politician who gives people, children, eggs in school and gives everyone a free TV, but the idea is they get a free TV so they watch, they have their own TV channel which they indoctrinate people to vote for them. So, are they actually benefiting? It may seem that they're benefiting the people, but is it? They have a very demoniac motive behind it. Yeah.
And again, contradiction with asuras, like Indrajit, he did the yagya to get power to kill Vishnu. Actually, they were fighting against the demigods. And demigods are...
They were fighting what, sir?
Against the demigods.
They were fighting against demigods, who had appeared as monkeys.
They were the ones who gave a lot from yagya.
Well, the Vedic process, it may give a result even to demoniac followers. Shukracharya, but because the demons followed him, and when Indra was angered Brihaspati, and then at that time the demons were becoming very strong because they were faithfully following their guru. And Bali Maharaj, by the strength of Shukra, he got the heavenly planets, and that's why all the demons were upset with him that he didn't follow Shukra's advice to not give charity to Vamana. And the result was, as Shukra said, he lost the heavenly planets. So the Vedic process in itself is powerful. Maybe that's one reason why it said it should, the mantra should not be heard by Shudras or lower. Can be misused also. So the Mimamsakas, their whole understanding is based on that. You just do it and you get the result.
Brahma felt
that he had to give. He was in a lose-lose situation again. Tell Stephen Pepper, if I don't give a benediction to Hiranyakashipu, we'll go on all these austerities. It will cause so much disturbance to the universe. If I do give him the benediction, it will also cause disturbance to the universe. Either way, but if for immediate relief. He thought, anyway, if I don't give him, he'll go on and it'll make a worse and worse situation. Sooner or later, I'll have to. But then Nrisimhadeva later told Brahma, don't give benedictions like that anymore. Brahma could have just killed him outright. But I guess as a Brahmana, he didn't want to do that. Though when Duryodhana was born, Vidura told Dhritarashtra, kill him, don't let him live anymore. Infanticide. Just kill him right now. And he's going to be a big problem. So there you are, there's an example of infanticide recommended. So, what else? What's the time? Pass the time. Okay, I think I'll finish there. We got through most of them. I could, you see, any one of these topics we could discuss. We can go very intricately in all these things. I guess we can do the rest in Baroda next month. You'll probably have a whole bunch more questions at that time. I didn't look at those other things you sent me. I just read this briefly once. I didn't prepare anything. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Yeah, it's a big ocean, Vedic understanding. You just get a little bit wrong and everything goes wrong. Just get it right and everything goes right. So it's important to get it right. Otherwise you end up with something which looks like the right thing, but it's the wrong thing. I'm going to talk about that in Baroda. I have one point I want to discuss about how to about consciousness raising, like in the West, this popular term, Buddhism, New Age. So I want to discuss that. In one sense, it's consciousness raising. You become vegetarians, they believe in reincarnation. And anyway, I'll discuss it. I have an idea to discuss it there. I am preparing a bit for many things.